Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat-treating ovens available. Find your next oven at evenheat-kiln.com. To the chopper!
Welcome to another episode of Knife Talk. This is the podcast for knife makers, people who are just interested in knives, and people who just like to hear three old guys talking shit, really. So, it's myself, Craig from Chop Knives. We've got Jeff Fader at Fader Knives, and yes. Mareko Malmasi of Malmasi Fire Arts. How are you guys?
I heard you, Mareko, say, speak for yourself. I want to step on that joke.
Come on. Let's start with Mareko. What have you been up to this week?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been feeling actually pretty old this week. I think as the weather's been getting colder, I've been feeling a little creakier. My hands are feeling stiff. My back feels really stiff. And there's not a lot to do about the cold. I actually tried to explain it to my shopmate, Jamie, when I was over in Connecticut, because I was complaining about how cold it gets here in Washington. He's like, well, doesn't it get colder over here? And it's true. Like, temperature wise, it gets much colder over in Connecticut, but in Washington, it's a damp cold. It's like you just got rained on, and then you're sitting in a blustering wind. Like, it's fucking freezing. Yeah, exactly. And so, but we just got one of those from Costco. We got one of those, like, what are they called? Like a parabolic heater. So it shoots like radiant heat at you. Unfortunately, it's not good for really heating an entire space. I think it's more for just heating. It's like a personal heater, basically, just one person, but it'll be enough to keep my ass thawed while I'm trying to grind and dipping my hands in cold water buckets and blah, blah, blah. But other than that, the big knife is coming along really well. I finally got the Japanese cowboy handle nailed yesterday, but it literally, like, I had a hard time getting into a groove and feeling comfortable with everything. And I think part of it is because I had such a problem last time. I kept second guessing myself, and so it literally took me all day to get the shape right. But I got it, and now I'm getting ready to start doing finishing coats on it. I'm feeling really good about that. And you know, the small batch production knives that I'm working on that don't currently have a name are coming along good too. The handles are glued on. I started sculpting on them, and they're looking pretty sweet. So nice. That's what I've been up to this last week. Nice. Yeah,
I did see the picture that you posted of that. They look very good. Very nice. Oh,
thank you.
Jeff, what have you been up to? Thank you.
Well, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I actually, the past 5 minutes, I've been jamming my truck filled with anvils and hammers, and I'm getting ready to go up to see the Modern Forge boys over at the Maker Camp this weekend. So as you hear this on Monday, it happened already. So I'm getting ready to go up there, and all the guys are all up there, and we're going to have some fun. And then what else? I kept working. I finished off a couple sets of knives early in the week, and those turned out real nice. And then I'm kind of started hand sanding the 50 El Bandito knives I made for Carl Ruiz. That's going on, and I was invited to a celebration of life. Of his life on Wednesday. There was a private thing. This is the first time you're hearing this. The guy I'm making the knives for, Carl Ruiz, passed away, and I'm working on his knives that are already sold and getting them all squared away and updating my customers. And they had at the restaurant that he ran, they had like a little remembrance, and I got to meet some people that I had heard on the radio a lot. I spent a little bit of time with Opie from Opie Radio, and I spent a little time with Sherrod Small, amazing comedian, Vic Henley, Nick Solaris, who's in the knife world. He's a big meat guy, good dude. And then who else? There was Matt Farah from the Smoking Gun podcast, a Smoking Tire podcast. And I met some customers of mine, and we just kind of, you know, celebrated who Carl was. And one of the none of it's funny, but you know, the crazy thing is I've been constantly just getting inundated with people who want one of his knives, and I made the decision that I'm not making any more knives for him. And we just really, I don't really want to get involved with selling knives in his name and taking money. Even if there's going to be a charity coming up, and I already said that I will provide a knife for them to auction, but I don't want another nickel from, you know, with his name on it. Just, it's just like, I'm a lot of things, but I'm not scum. So that's number two. But we, every time we make a celebrity, a chef's collaboration knife, we always have one for ourselves. We have them for all the chefs we had, and we had one for Carl, and we, instead of keeping it for ourselves, Tony and I gave it to the sous chef who's now taking over the restaurant.
Oh,
and that was a really, well, I mean, he's an awesome guy. His name is Mario Chappie. He's an awesome dude. He really was more than just a sous chef to Carl. And he really, he got a little emotional when I gave it to him. I'm like, listen, if you cry in this kitchen, I'm going to slap you in your face. So then he's a big dude too. And all of a sudden Tony turns to Mario and says, I'm not going to do anything to you. You can do whatever the hell you want. I'm getting the fuck out of here.
So yesterday was World Mental Health Day. And you're saying to guys, if you cry, I'm going to slap you in the face.
Well, it
is
was
that
like
the official line, is it?
No. But I mean, at the time, it was just like, look, you know, time had passed. I know this is a joy. This isn't a joyous occasion, but you know, let's not cry in the kitchen in front of your staff, and you know, you're a big guy, and let's just, you know, I understand, and I was trying to be funsy, really.
I got you.
So, but I, you know, yes, I did, you know, threaten his face with a slap, but I mean, other than that, I was like, you know, trying to like cheer the situation up. So then boom, now I'm sitting in my car filled with anvils and stuff, getting ready to go up see Jimmy DeResta and all those guys.
Is that a whole weekend thing, or is it just the Saturday?
Yes. Cliff is doing the reconnoitering right now. He's up there with Chris Cash and all the Jimmy DeResta guys, and I know Moonshine Metalworks is up there. I'm looking forward to meeting him. He's all the way from London. I know he and Alex Pohl are teaching a class next week. Nice. So I hope to see those guys this weekend, and Chris Zepp and Paul Pinto and all this, you know, East Coast guys are going to be there, and that's very exciting. And look, it's, you know, we'll see what happens. Sunset and I are, you know, Sunset's going to be there, and you know, Mr. Cheerful. I'm very looking forward to seeing his big mopey face.
You have to say hi for us.
I will certainly say hi for us, and I also loaded up the goddamn megaphone. I loaded up the megaphone because I got to make sure people know how it is. We're doing two demos alongside Alan Durkin, and there's going to be a lot of like high level people there. And we're doing two demos. One demo, we're going to do a giant anchor, and then we're going to also forge a sledgehammer. So I got the megaphone, and I'm gonna blow the doors off of everybody there.
They all know what you're doing.
They will all know what we're doing, 100%. Nice. And I will be plugging Knife Talk Podcast a lot. So here you are. Grassroots, baby.
That's the way to go.
What about you, Craig? What have you been up to, man?
Yeah, Craig, you've been in a rush.
Oh, it's been a crazy week. So the most of it has been dominated with the new CNC that arrived. So a little CNC mill that I'd ordered. The whole point of this is we talked last week about taking on that first member of staff. And the more and more I was thinking, well, I know, I'll get something that'll work 24 hours a day for me if I need it to. It won't take toilet breaks. It won't waste time on Instagram, and it'll just cut out handles for me nonstop, perfect every time.
Nice.
And it's a little CNC, so it's you know, it's only a little thing, but it works perfectly. I'm just super, super amazed by the power on this. I didn't think it would be that good. It's just zipping through, and any handle material I've given it, and aluminium too, not that I'd use that for a handle, but it zips through that. And it's just been a huge learning curve this week. So, you know, for anybody who hasn't used the CNC before, there's obviously the design software. You need to design what you're making. Then there's CAD software, there's CAM software, there's mechanical movement software. There's all this kind of stuff to get your head around, and you've got to get each one of them right for it to work. And I've got it doing the basic stuff that I needed to do. You know, it's nothing too complex. It's a 2D file of a handle, and it cuts it out, and it drills my holes ready for my Corbies with the nice steps in them ready to go. And it's great. So every sort of 3 minutes, I'm getting a new set of handles made, which is fantastic. So I need to be speed up on the blades. But
that's awesome.
It's just been real fun as well. real fun to learn something new and just to dive, you know, completely, you know, that kind of when you're learning something and you can't sleep and you're on YouTube at 3 a.m, that kind of thing. I really enjoy that, you know, a real sort of deep dive into something. And it's I don't know what I didn't do before. It was a few hundred pounds, and, you know, I love it.
So was it easy to translate your information? Was it hard to learn the software programming?
Well, I've always sort of designed my knives in a sort of like technical drawing kind of thing, in a 2D program anyway. So all of my knives start life on a screen. So I've got these CAD files of my knives. So then what I need to do is sort of chop them where the handle stops. So I've, you know, then I've got the CAD file of my handle. Yeah, I mean,
a little bit.
Yeah, if you're comfortable using computers, you'll get your head around it. But what I've never done before is the sort of the CAM side of things, which is setting things up for the CNC, and the tool selection, making sure your feeds are right, your feed speeds, and all that kind of thing. So a lot of that was just experimentation and just wrecking a few things, wrecking a few bits, wrecking some materials, that kind of thing. But once you get all dialed in, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And every time I press cut, I'm just amazed to see this thing moving. You know, and the accuracy is, you know, way better than I could ever do by hand anyway. And I just think it's one of those things. It's a dumb part of knife making, you know, cutting out the handle. Anybody can do that. So, you know, the dumb parts, why not give it to somebody else, and I'll concentrate on the skilled bits. That's the way I look at it.
So are you, when you're designing the handle, are you giving a little bit of slop for the outside edge, or?
I'm not. No.
But
I'm basically going to the drawing. So what you can do is, in the CAM software, you can specify where you want your cut to be. So whether it's on the line, whether inside the line, or whether it's outside the line, and it'll take into account the bit size. So you get this perfect fit. So once it's been then bolted with it, with your Corbies onto the actual blade, it's completely seamless. But obviously, I'm going to go in and do the polishing then anyway. So you're going to take that down. But, you know, I generally take the handle stock down as well then at the same time. So it's it just works perfectly. I don't know why I didn't do it before. And I had a million messages from people saying, add tabs to that, add tabs. Because I put this video on of one of the first cuts.
I was one of those.
You were one of them.
What's add tabs?
One of many. So I put a video up of one of the first cuts, and it cut out these really basic just rectangles, which, you know, before I started doing handles, I thought, let's just cut out some rectangles first. And what I wasn't doing was adding tabs in. So it was cutting out the rectangle, then the rectangle was sort of free to, you know, zip out with the tool. And, you know, it could have caused, broken the tool, could have done all sorts. So what you can do is, in the CAM software, is add these little tabs, sort of 1 millimeter tabs. So it doesn't pop out.
It'll just slap out.
So when you finished at the end, you just pop it, and it's so satisfying, just popping these handles out of the material. Yeah, I love it. So it's almost become a bit of an obsession this week. I've been loving it. And then the week didn't end so well, but I'm going to put that in the beefs later, because I've got a real beef today.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. So
French beef. You got a French beef.
A very fresh French beef. Let's crack over some news.
A cordon bleu. This is Knife Talk Podcast News. I'm reporting from the inside of my truck today, in the middle of a parking lot. I think it's a QFC parking lot. Anyways, we got news we want to share with all of you. Firstly, I want to kick it off again, reminding everybody that Blade Show West is happening November 1st to 3rd, and that's in Portland, Oregon. Tickets are available now online at bladeshow.com. And if you type in all caps Neil20, you can save 20% off any of the tickets that you get, whether it's a single day pass or a 3-day pass. But the show is going to be pretty rad. They got a lot of cool stuff going on. Some of them is the free seminars and demonstrations they got going on there. And I just want to give our buddy Jeremy Spake, a plug, because he's going to be doing a seminar basically sharing his love for Scandinavian knives and his path into learning how they're made and constructed and everything that goes around them. They're also, the big thing, on top of having all the different table holders and vendors, they're going to be doing the first ever kitchen knife cutting competition. So they got some new information for you guys. Last week I touched on the fact that they're going to have knife makers versus knife makers, and then on a separate category they're going to have chefs against chefs. So they're not going to be mixing chefs versus knife makers. They're going to keep them to themselves, because otherwise a chef would pretty much just destroy probably most of the knife makers that would get up and try to do some knife skills and knife cutting and stuff like that. But what's really cool is they got a big cash prize. They didn't disclose to me how much, but they got a cash prize for the knife maker side of the winning, or the winning knife maker for the knife maker bracket. And then they also, our guy Fingal Ferguson, has donated a knife, a custom made knife, as the winning prize for the chef side of the brackets. So chefs, if any chefs listen to this and you're going to be in the area, this is an awesome opportunity to show off your skills and possibly get a hold of a Fingal Ferguson knife.
You can't get hold of. He's got years of people waiting. And yeah,
this is very, very special.
Yeah. Wow.
Me too. So,
and me
so
too.
This is all going to be me too. Yeah,
you say all of a sudden, I was waiting for that text. What about me? What about you? Don't want one? I'm like, oh, I want one, Fingal. Send him one over here.
So listen, anybody listening, don't use the hashtag me too now if you want a knife too, because you're just going to complicate the whole thing.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, man. How's Harry? All right. Well, keep going.
Okay.
Keep going, Mareko. Oh, sorry about that speed bump there. Oh.
That's all right. All right. So this is all going to be happening at the West Coast Pit Party. So this is happening Saturday night. They have a pit area. So in Atlanta, they have the pit. That's the kind of the area where they got a couple bars and they got a restaurant. And it's at the base of the Renaissance Waverly Hotel. They don't have something like that in Portland, because the event space is separate from where most people are going to be staying. So they've gotten a hold of a separate event space from the show that will be the West Side Pit. And that is where the knife cutting competition is going to be going on. And if you go, they're going to be giving you a free raffle ticket, because they're going to have door prizes as well. They're going to be giving away some knives as well as some other stuff. They haven't given me all the details on that yet either. But if anybody, if you're a maker or a chef and you think you want to compete, you got to get a hold of the show organizers and send them an email at bladewest@bladeshow.com and put in the subject line chef's knife cutting competition, and they'll get you the information that you need to kind of fill out and sign and have ready to do the competition at Blade West.
I think Kasumi Kev, I know you're listening to this right now, Kasumi Kev, Kev Pellegrino, you should get yourself a plane ticket and get your ass out there and sweep up.
Oh yeah, man.
Sweep up.
See ya, buddy.
Sweep up.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah, sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and when I was talking to them, they're more focused on accuracy instead of speed, because otherwise it'd just be a big fucking mess of chopped vegetables and stuff all over the place. And more likely people are going to hurt themselves because they're trying to work faster than maybe they normally do. So it's more about accuracy. So keep that in mind. They will be sharing some of like the cutting tasks that are going to be asked of the competitors.
Speaking of stuff all over the place, Mert Tansu posted a video. You know that YouTuber, what is it, Colin Firth? Colin Firth? Who's that guy?
Colin Firth, he's an actor, British actor.
Not him. It's like Colin, you know the guy who wears a tie? He wears his thin ties from England? He makes stuff?
Yeah.
Who's that guy? You know what I'm talking about? Everyone's screaming. Nah. He does YouTube videos. He does them with Alec once in a while. He's a super thin guy. He makes like Wolverine claws and all this nonsense. He made a belt with knives attached to the belt, and he presses a button and they spin around his waist. It's like awesome. This knife spinning hula hoop. And then he starts dropping vegetables in it he puts a plate underneath him, and he's like just dropping. Geez. He's like holding down these vegetables and they're all slicing down around his waist. And it was talk about a mess. It looked like a disaster, but you guys don't know who I'm talking about, so never mind.
It sounds like the little Chinese kid from the Goonies.
That's a really good story.
No, it's not a little Chinese kid. He's an English kid, English guy who wears thin ties, and this is your neck of the woods, Craig.
All right, never mind. I'll have to look him up. I'll Google English guy thin tie with.
YouTuber. All right. Next to the. Let's go. Keep going. I'm sorry.
We've had somebody ring up with some news.
All right.
Hello?
Hey, Knife Talk. This is Jonathan Wessel. I work over here at New West Knife Works in Victor, Idaho. We are looking to hire two more knife makers to bring to our production facility. If you'd be interested in that position, go ahead and send your resume to Erin, and that is E-R-I-N, at newwestknifeworks.com. I'm a huge fan of the show and a longtime listener. Hope to hear from a bunch of people. Bye-bye.
Nice. More people taking on more work.
There you go. They're going to talk a little bit more about them at the end of the show. But as we were listening to him, the guy's name is Colin Furz, F-U-R-Z-E. Uh-huh. So there you are. Both just doesn't matter anyway. So guy's Colin Furz. He's got like a knife hula hoop. And let's just stop. Let's stop where we're at.
What else we got? Any more news? Fine.
Yeah, I got a calendar thing because I don't think I'm going to be able to make it, unfortunately, to the end of the show. So I'm going to do this now. So coming up on Wednesday, the 16th, that is Bob Kramer's birthday. If you don't know who Bob Kramer is, go back to the archives, listen to Craig's episode where he interviews Bob Kramer. But basically, he is a legend in the knife making craft, and he really helped pave the way for a lot of us. He and has kind of brought knife making to the forefront of kind of popular culture in a way, especially like alongside with kind of the popularity of cooking, like celebrity chefs and food culture and stuff like that, and how that's all got really big. You know, he really paved the way for a lot of us. I know definitely me directly because I worked for him and he introduced me to this whole trade and taught me so much, which I've kind of turned around and helped to share with other folks out there in the world. And I know, I don't know if Jeff might have still been on the kitchen knife making kick, and Craig, but I guess I can only speak for myself and say that I would not have. But I really know that he's really influenced a lot of folks. And so if people will go give him a what's up and say happy birthday to him and say thank you, that would be awesome. I think unfortunately, Bob gets a lot of credit, especially in the food world, but I think actually in the knife world, he doesn't really get a lot of props. I think when he first started doing it back in 98 is when he got his Master Smith. I think it was 97, actually. 97, he got his Master Smith. He was the only ABS knife maker who was really making chef's knives, like professionally, and focusing on it and showing that they're not just a knife, that they can be artfully done and presented in a beautiful way. And so I think it'd be nice if people dropped him a line, a DM, or commented on a picture and just said what's up, happy birthday, and thank you. And
cool. What day was his birthday, did you say then? Sorry,
October 16th, this Wednesday.
Cool.
Yeah,
I shall be doing exactly that.
Cool.
Any light news you've got for us this week, Jeff?
Well, I do. You know, crazy glue is in the news. A lot of us use crazy glue or CA glue. Hmm. I don't know what that means, but I don't know CA, but I know crazy glue.
Cyanoacrylate.
All right, there we are.
I think that's
so. We use it for everything. It's fantastic. But some kids are using it now for something real stupid. So. Last year, there was, I guess there was this thing that Kylie Jenner was doing where she was putting a shot glass up to her mouth and sucking into the shot glass, and it made her lips kind of plump up, and all these kids are starting to do that. Hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That's what you guys do, right?
Well,
all right. So,
no, I go the Bruce Jenner way of doing things.
You old chopperoo. I got you. I'm with you. So I guess now what's happening is I'm reading this, and this comes from Allure magazine. Not that we just use the news, we're using a Allure magazine. This time around, the challenge has been replaced the shot glass with an adhesive to make lips appear plump. TikTok users are spreading glue on their upper lip and gluing their lip in place. The result, instant duck face. So I guess what they're doing is they're dabbing, they're putting a little bit of crazy glue on the top of their upper lip and then pushing their lip up so the top of the lip is glued to right under their nose.
Oh my God.
What the hell is that?
I'm all over it.
Yeah, well, listen, you're on TikTok, so I would imagine you've already seen it before. My daughter said
he's also on there.
My daughter had seen it. She was telling me about it. She's like, yeah, it's the stupidest thing you ever seen. So these girls are gluing up their lips. They're gluing their lips to their upper lip. Now the problem is the dermatologists are not happy about it. Just say no to the lip glue challenge, says so-and-so of the board-certified dermatologist. Applying crazy glue or any glue for that matter to the skin is a bad idea for a number of reasons. The primary ingredient is, as you said, cyanoacrylate. It's meant to glue things like metals and paper, not delicate skin on the face. Acrylates are extremely irritating to the skin, as well as true allergic reactions, which can result in redness, swelling, and blistering, and infections, even permanent scarring. Since the acrylates are toxic, there's even a risk of ingesting them when you're applying your mouth. These motherfuckers are getting some on their mouth, in their mouth.
Idiots.
So I've actually seen like pictures of people who have tried to get it. I mean, I know that you guys have gotten crazy glue in between your fingertips, and it's like you can't pull them apart. I actually did that recently, and I had to get a razor blade and kind of like cut through in between. So these people are they're gluing their mouths together, and then they're getting these terrible bruises and like burns and cuts and, you know. So
what is wrong with the world? Crazy.
So keep that glue off your face.
What are your thoughts on people gluing their cuts, minor cuts? I've seen people using super glue to just bond their skin back together. Have you ever done that?
I'm 100% against it.
Yeah, completely.
I'm 100% for it.
All right, let's have a debate. Listen, it would be a very short bit if we didn't talk about it.
I've definitely done it more than a dozen times, and that was apparently somebody told me that was the actual original purpose for the invention of superglue.
I hear
was
it.
For battlefield, care, helping to close up cuts and wounds.
Yeah,
and so. And it works. You know what? I used to use liquid bandage, and it just does not hold up.
That
it does suck.
It's
worse. So I was like, fuck this. And I started super gluing, and it's been awesome. I'm all about it.
I did it one time, and it got I got infected underneath. I was like, I don't need this in my life.
I would have thought all the nasties in it would get into your bloodstream. Could be good.
It just like. I didn't clean it out right. Maybe it was still bleeding. I don't know what happened, but it was like it started after a day. It was just like I could tell that it was feeling bad. So I'm 100% Band-Aid and electric tape guy. Electric tape is my favorite. Electric tape is my favorite tape of all tapes.
Sure. I'm doing a Band-Aid and then athletic tape over the top of it.
What kind of Band-Aids do you use? Because I don't use those motherfucking fabric Band-Aids. Those things can kiss this ass because it's like putting a toilet scrubber on your hand. Those things get so disgusting. Band-Aid, everybody's like, what the fuck? They're Band-Aids. There's a Band-Aid, it's a waterproof Band-Aid they make out of like duct tape material. That stuff's the best.
Okay.
And rubber band and that's then cool. Electric tape. There you go.
No.
So guys.
I've still got a stash of Band-Aids that a former sponsor of the podcast sent when I bought something from them. Well, they gave me something and a big stash of Band-Aids. They said, you're going to cut your fingers. And I think Jeff will disagree with me.
Band-Aids are fine. People have been asking me why I've been making a joke. I'm not disparaging anybody.
Combat abrasives make the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers, available in any size and at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with the promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now!
Do it now! 15% off any belt or anything that they sell actually at Combat Abrasives. So go check them out, combatabrasives.com. We all use them and they are fantastic.
I did get some Scotch-Brite belts from them, and their prices are very good. And I also got heavy discs for my disc grinder. That was really good too. I like what they have. 15% off.
Nice. I tell you what I've just ordered from them as well is I've used those scalloped belts before, you know, where the sides are scalloped.
Yeah.
But they've always been I've only been able to get the 1-inch wide ones, but they've got the 2-inch wide ones in stock now. So it's the first time I'll be using them. Yeah. So I'm looking forward.
Now you
to
get
that.
Yeah, as you always wanted, a little bit more girth.
That's what you need.
I understand. That's what you want. You wanted it. You got it. A little bit more girth.
Hey man. Can I ask you a question?
I just cut you off there.
Fine, worth it. Totally worth it. Always, when you have the chance to cut me off, cut me off. So this is our segment called Hey Man, Can I Ask You a Question? You DM us questions, and we'll try to answer them. Or you can call the hotline that we've been putting up on the Instagram feed, and you can call in your questions and be, you know, interactive. So the first question comes from Fallbrook Forge. Hey, cutie. When finishing grinding a kitchen knife, do you take any special precautions to keep from burning a tip? Love the podcast. Cheers, Tyler. So how do you prevent the tip from being burnt?
Burnt up.
Yeah.
Sharp belts. Combat abrasive. Sharp. Just use. I always use sharp belts, especially when I'm getting to the last little bits. And also, I keep a bucket of water nearby so that I can quench into the bucket. I don't wait to feel heat. I kind of do it more on a timing thing, so I just like grind for about 4 or 5 seconds and then dip the tip into the bucket.
Yeah,
and then I'm back to the
grind, girl.
back and forth.
Yeah,
and
girl,
that way I know I'm keeping it cool without kind of waiting for it to get hot.
Don't wait.
So many Don't. Jokes so many
dip it
jokes
in. Don't wait.
I'm pretty much the same. Yeah, just I just have a bucket there, keep dipping, and just, well, you know, when you're getting down to when it's super thin, you just got to just be more cautious about it, you know, and just go nice and slow, keep dipping, keeping it cool. And again, I hear some people say, you know, they'll keep going till it's too hot to touch. It's too late. If it's a real thin blade, it's way too late. So like Marek,
it's not worth it.
Don't wait for it to get to that. Just every two passes, give it a dip.
That's the reason why I don't like to wear gloves. Sometimes I wear very thin nylon, those latex gloves, because if you can feel, if it's too hot for your fingers, always dip it.
Yeah.
So we're good.
Yeah, I grind barehanded as well.
Yeah.
Or now I used to do gloves, but now I'm grinding barehanded.
Yeah. All right, baby. Let's go to the next question before something goes weird.
This next one's from @kinds. Father's knives. He says, hey man, can I ask you a question? How does the craft of knife making influence your character? Do you take life lessons out of your time in the shop? I would say I get a lot of time to think while I'm grinding or hand sanding or doing whatever, but
yeah, I'd say that. No, I don't. But like you said, it gives me time. So I listen to a lot of stuff. I listen to a lot of podcasts and that kind of thing, which obviously that's going to influence my character, that kind of thing. But the knife making itself, it's a job. You know, it's something that I love doing, but I don't think it's shaping me as a person as such.
Blacksmithing and knife making has shaped me as a person for sure. Blacksmithing more than anything else. Nothing has changed the person who I, you know, it's weird because I started totally backwards. I started out as an artist and then I started going backwards and working for technical places. Usually you start off at like a technical job and then you start to become an artist, but I went backwards. But becoming a blacksmith and learning that every time you put something in the fire, you have to be super mentally prepared because you have such a limited amount of time to work, you become more organized. I wasn't as organized before. It just wasn't in me. And to be able to kind of like, you know, focus on accuracy, but also the amount of time and the preparation between heats, it got to the point where I became so much more organized with everything, especially like when I do demos. I spoke at a couple places, and the preparation of being a blacksmith has allowed me to become better suited in life because I'm far more organized where I wouldn't have before. It's everything is, you know, game plans. And the other thing is when I was doing a lot of installations, I was in charge of putting all the install trucks together. So like, if we didn't have something when we were in the field, everyone looked at me. So I had to become more organized in terms of, do we have doubles on the 5/30 seconds bits, or do we have enough taps, or we have, you had to think about every single different thing that you could possibly need in the shop in the install truck. And that made me much more organized in terms of being ready to roll. So yeah, the answer is yes. It's totally helped me, and I try to do it whenever I do anything. I try to be as focused and as organized as possible. There you go.
Nice.
No dick jokes in that question.
No, quite serious. Quite serious.
Yeah, very much. Yeah.
The pragmatic okay. redneck has asked.
Oh, hold on a second.
Sure.
So I'm down to 5%. Sadly to say, I have to say goodbye to you guys because I don't want to lose my portion of the recording. Ah. So I'm gonna shut her down. I'm sorry. It's short. But I gotta go.
Good to see you. Have a good week, yeah. And we'll see you soon.
See you soon.
All right, buddy.
All right, there
Take
we are.
Take care, guys. Have a good show.
All right. There we are.
Well, this next
and then
question.
There was two. And then there was two.
It's probably good that Mareko isn't listening to this next question. It's probably perfect timing.
Go ahead.
The pragmatic redneck asks, next time Mareko does a Britney Spears cover, can he be wearing pigtails and a schoolgirl outfit? And apparently he's asking for a friend.
Yeah, right. You slipped out just in time, Mareko. You slipped out just in time. Yeah.
Let's move to the phones. Yeah. Let's move to the phones.
Hello?
I would love to ask a question.
Go ahead.
I think I'm supposed to ask the question here. If I'm going to find out Jeff Knife something really, long and thin or whatever, you get to the, heat treat, how do you keep it from warping with the amount of forging you're going to have to do to forge out a piece so thin? And second question, do you typically grind it before the heat treat or after the heat treat? I'm relatively new. Anyway, thanks.
Okay.
All right.
So he's asking about heat treating, and I think specifically for forged knives, I think what he's saying is how do you stop it from warping, and are you doing the grinding before heat treat and all the rest of it? What do you think?
My opinion is, and this also goes for stock removal too, it depends on how much material you have. If you heat treat and it's too thin, it turns into like a wiggle worm, and the blade, it ruined the whole thing. In regards to figuring out how to prevent, there are ways in which you can prevent warping. One of the ways is to normalize three times. They also call it thermal cycling. At some point, we're all going to have to just say it's either thermal cycling or normalizing. Everyone gets a little bit confused, but basically you're putting it into the oven or the forge lower than magnetic, 1500 degrees, and then letting it cool, 1400 degrees, letting it cool, 1300 degrees, letting it cool. And then you're allowing the grain structure to kind of relax and reorganize. And what happens is, as it's normalizing, you can kind of like, it starts to relax and you lose some of the warp. Now, let's say you normalize it, it's super straight. And you decide I'm going to take a little bit of the material off. You can take a little bit of the material off. It's dicey when you get too thin, when you're heat treating, when it's too thin, the general, the theory with, the ABS guys is, you can heat treat and leave it the thickness of a dime. There's a couple tricks to get warps out. One is when you bring the knife out of the forge or your oven and you quench it in your oil or your water, you can, while the austenite is converting to martensite, now always remember guys, austenite first. Austenite is when the iron carbide's in solution throughout the knife, and then it's in that liquid and you dump it in the oil or your water, and then the austenite converts to martensite. You can dip it in the austenite, dip it in the oil, sorry. And then you can count to you're looking for a specific temperature. I believe it's under 900 degrees. Jonathan Porter, you can text me if I'm right or wrong. Or I usually do is I count to 13 or 15, and you want to agitate while you're quenching, because you want to prevent the vapor jacket and the vapor. You want to have that nice oil, that viscosity correct, and you want to make sure that you're converting your austenite to martensite. Count to 13 or 15, then pull it out, and it's still, the austenite's converting to martensite. You have a little bit of time to bend it, give it a little bit of persuasion into straight, and then cool it down, and then you can, and then it'll continue kicking over to Martin's side.
Yeah, well, talking about the normalizing, I remember seeing that video that you did. I think it was when you were doing the Cubans, that big batch of Cubans, and you uh-huh. held one up, and you could see the color sort of coming out of it and coming back in slightly. And it's great to see.
The other thing is, yeah, that's the annoying thing. Like I've warped a pile of blades, and I didn't know what to do. So let's just say, for argument's sake, let's say you quenched it, you able to be pull it out after 15 count of 15. You straightened it out, and then let's say you put it on an anvil or something. The anvil can suck out a little bit of heat on the cold side, and what happens is it'll still turn into a banana. If it's ice cold, it's been heat treated and it's still got a warp in it, what you can do is this trick I learned from my main man, Nick Anger. You take a bar of steel and then you shim it with some pennies or some nails with little clamps, and you overcorrect the warp. Then you stick it in your temper oven, clamps and all, and then you temper it. When it's finished tempering, pull it out, let it cool ice cold. You can pull it out. You can pull out that warp. The other thing is, if you don't need to do full 2 hours, you can do 45 minutes. And if it's after two cycles at 400 degrees and you still have a warp in it, drop your oven down to 350. Go under what your tempering degree is, and then you can keep going until you get that warp out. 100% works every time.
So what I tend to do is, I mean, all of mine are stock removal anyway, but I use a very thin stock. It's a 2.3 mil stock for most of the stuff that I do. So I'll heat treat without any grinding. So it's profiled to shape, but there's no beveled ground at all.
Right.
Simply because, I was getting a few warps, and when you're working on a big batch, it's just a time suck. And I think when it's a thin stock, you're not really going through that many more belts on a hardened steel anyway. And also, if you've got the slightest of warps, you've got that ability then to grind it out. But what I do is I tend to heat treat batches together. So then when it comes to tempering afterwards, I put them all together. So all my knives, they'll be identical, the same batch. I put them all together. I put two thick bits of stock, sort of 10 mil stock either side, clamp them together with a metal G-clamp, and stick that whole rig into the oven. For its tempering.
There you go.
So it's all flat against each other, and it'll all temper together for that 2 hours, bring it out, undo it, and you're going to be good. But then if I do have the slightest of wiggles, I know I can sort of correct that in the grind.
And the last thing is for the forging, you don't want to forge too thin, especially on the edge, because you still have to remove all that scale. If let's just say you want to keep some of the scale at the top of the knife, fine, but you're not going to keep at least the first half an inch towards the edge. So you can't go to zero when you're forging, because you still have to take some of that material off for a chef's knife.
Yeah.
So you're almost better off with some steels is giving yourself a little bit knowing how much more material you'll need, because you're going to have to remove some of it anyway. Yeah. So there you go.
It's a good question. Good question.
Though. Yeah. Great question. Great question.
Max,
you go ahead.
You go.
No. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right. Maximus, do we do this? Oh, Maximus Knives says, how do you feel when you're putting the finishing touches on a knife? Are you excited it's done or sad that it's done?
Excited it's done. You've given birth to something new, and you can move on again to, the fun bit again, which, I'm never sad. I've got no emotional connection with the knife. Let's move on to the next one.
Yeah, I'm 100%. All right, what's next? It's just like once I take the picture, then I'm just like, all right, let's send this in the mail. I don't get too hung up on it anymore.
I tell you what I've got now in my shop. In the corner, it's sort of protected from all the dust and so on, but I've got one of those Amazon, those white picture tents. So as soon as something's done, I can drop it in there, get a picture done, and I know it's done. I can just keep it on my hard drive till I need it. It's just really handy having something set up always there. Anyway, we've had another phone call.
Oh, boy.
Hello?
Hey, this is David Ben from Big Forest Blacksmithing. I've got a tip for all my fellow Canadian knife makers. If you're wanting to get into wood stabilization and you're looking for some cactus juice, I would suggest going to Texas Farrier Supply, because even after the exchange rate and all the shipping, it's still cheaper than buying it from anywhere in Canada. And with the discount code KNIFETALK10, you can also get 10% off of anything at Texas Farrier Supply. So that's my tip. Have a good one.
Our sponsor reads for us now.
These Canadians are the best.
I'll go next, then we'll just let the viewers do the rest. That'd be great.
Outstanding. Canadians are the greatest. What a great. Yep, there you go. Texas Ferry Supply. Get your 10% off.
Yeah, and ship into Canada. Cool. Summit and C. Smith in asked, hey cuties, when. Oh, we've done this one. We've done that.
No, we haven't. Have we?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, maybe we have. Yeah. All right, never mind.
Burning River Forge asks, hey cuties, can I ask you a question? I've never forged a billet of Damascus into a blade before. If I buy a billet and forge it into a blade, what will happen to the pattern? Will it still look good after it's forged? Shame Mareko's not here, but I think you've done this anyway, haven't you, Jeff?
Well, there's difference. I'm not Mr. Damascus, but I mean, when you're forging metal, it moves. And the whole point of Damascus is you have these differing grains of high carbon steel and high nickel steel, and they're forge welded together, and as they smush around, they're going to change. So there are certain patterns that you have to be very careful on how you forge them, especially if you want them to look a certain way. If you're forging Damascus and you want it to look like it's pouring out of the bolster, you have to be aware. You have to be careful of that. That's why a lot of people stock removals Damascus. Mm. Same reason why if you have a pattern specific, like Mareko's knives are very, his mosaic tiles are very pattern specific. So he's got to be very aware of how the pattern is affected by how he forges the tip. Same thing with feather Damascus. With that said, it's all different. You know, Damascus is different based on what you want it to do. A lot of people use random pattern Damascus because who the hell cares? I mean, it's going to be random. That's why it's random. You know, it's going to be what it's going to be. But you have to take an account for how you want that final look to be. A lot of people, you can get good Damascus. You can get stock removal Damascus, but you have to know that when you stock removal Damascus, the pattern is going to be a specific way based on how you cut out where your heel and ricasso are. Yeah. So,
yeah.
There you go.
Makes sense.
Quickie answer. Okay. This one comes from Kane RVA. I'm a hobbyist maker and have a ton of respect for professional makers making their living at knife making. Being full-time makers, do you find it disrespectful or insulting when hobbyist makers advertise their knives for sale? I've made only a few knives, but get asked all the time from friends and coworkers to make and sell them a knife. Keep it real. Thanks.
Supply and demand. If people want your stuff, you make it. And don't care if people think you're being disrespectful. If you need to do what you need to do. And if the quality of your work is enough that people want to give you money for it, go ahead. As long as you're being honest with them, they know what they're getting. That's one thing I do like about the knife making community is that, you know, people. Okay, there may be some who, you know, they'll think, oh, what the hell are they doing? You know, they're just getting into it and they're selling. But, you know, who cares about them? Do what you need to do.
And there are people who have listened to this podcast who said, what the hell are these guys talking about?
Yeah.
It gets to the point where you have to make a decision. And, you know, I know that there are people who say the same about me and you and Mareko. Hmm. What the hell is he doing? Or why the hell has he got so many followers? Or why does he think he can do a podcast? Or how come they're getting sponsors? It gets to the point where everyone's, you know, people look at what other people are doing. And you have to have a little bit of a thick skin, obviously. You don't. The most important thing is you're being fair to yourself, but fair to your customers too.
Yeah.
Just because the guy down the street selling a knife for $500 doesn't mean you have to. You know, I've had guys who ask me how much my knives cost, and they say, "Well, I better raise my prices." And it's just like, well, I mean, you know, just because I mean, that's a personal decision.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, you gotta, ultimately, I like the knife community a lot. I'm very thankful to the friends that I've made in the knife community, but I honestly, I'm much more interested as this as a business, and I'm interested in building customers, and knife makers don't buy knives. Unfortunately, most of them don't.
Yeah.
So I don't, a pat on the back from someone or a remark from someone, is it helpful? Maybe it isn't helpful. But at the same time, as long as you're being honest with yourself and giving your customers value and being, you know, a relationship and giving them something to say, you know what, that was a really good opportunity, then go for it. And don't worry about what other people say.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. Knife makers aren't buying your knives. It's people who want a knife. So, yeah.
But there are a lot of sourpusses out there who are envious of other people, and that's just the way it's going to be. You just, you know, ultimately it's like, you know, what are you going to, we'll wake up in the morning, you can't go to work because, you know, what did you say, Big Boy 69 had something to say about your knives? No, of course not. You have to, like, you know, you have a little inner fortitude and know that, you know, we're with you. Go sell your, and when your coworker asks you for a knife, and he asks you how much, you say, how much do you got? And that's the answer. How much do you got?
A question from Raw Blades. That's R-O-H-R Blades. Recently, I've been arguing quite heavily with a customer. Nice start. That told me that he hates carbon steel blades on kitchen knives because it causes food to taste bad. And he asked, how real is this? He says, P.S. I told him that the most probable cause of that was that he either had shitty cooking skills or a shitty knife cleaning skills.
Yeah, listen, what a customer. What a relationship. That is a relationship. I have heard that carbon steel can leave a flavor. I would imagine go ahead.
I was just going to say, it can leave a metallic-y taste to certain foods, like especially acidic foods such as lemons, that kind of thing. You can slightly taste it. And I'd say it's especially for a new blade, one that hasn't developed a nice patina yet.
The other thing is, I have had desserts made by the dishwasher at a restaurant who was cutting garlic. So you can definitely, you know, there are different ways in which you can, you know, look, sushi guys use carbon steel knives and they're, you know, there's not a lot of ingredients. So if something tastes a little bit like your knife, they're going to notice. I would tend to say that it's not the knife. It might be the preparation, as you were saying.
Quite possibly. Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
okay.
So
let's move straight on. 73 Forge asks, quick question for the gorgeous trio. Just the duo today now.
Yeah.
Are there any concerns for Cerakoting? Is it Cerakoting or
Cerakoting? Cerakoting.
Chef knives as far as food contamination goes. Loves the show and awesome sharing of info.
So Cerakoting is when you're spraying on this material and then you're baking it on an oven. So a lot of tactical guys will Cerakote knives because if it's a carbon steel knife, it will give protection, but it won't be shiny. I guess if you're on, like, you know, combat missions and if you're like Snake Eyes from G.I. Joe and you don't want like Storm Shadow to know you're out there, you Cerakote your shit. But it comes off. Like, if you know, especially if you're cutting up a something with a bone in it, and next thing you know, you see a black Cerakote stripe on your ham. I would probably stay away from Cerakoting anything with food.
Yeah. Yeah, I see Aaron Goff always putting coatings on his blades. But obviously his are, you know, tactical blades, hunting blades, that kind of thing. The amount of sort of prep that goes into the blade before coating, I mean, he's always shown pictures of the knives that he's rejecting, and, you know, because, you know, it's not perfect. So I think it's a lot of work, and I think for a chef knife, it's not necessary. But actually, I've just this week, I've got a blade that was coated. So I collect, like, Opinel knives. You know, they're cheap and cheerful.
Yeah.
But there's this, the number 8 is the classic Opinel knife, you know, the folding knife, the number 8. They've released not many of them. They call it the Black Edition, where everything's black.
Like, sweet.
So the blade is black and the protective ring is all black. And I managed to track one down last weekend, finally. So I've got one of them. But yeah, it's the only knife that I've got with a coat in, but I can't see why you'd want to use it really for the chef knife.
Is it good looking?
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Yeah. And I love Opinel knives just because of their simplicity. And they don't pretend to... They're cheap. They're like super cheap. They don't pretend to be anything other than a cheap, usable knife. But this black one, it's beautiful, yeah. Yeah. Not so cheap, but it's a collector's edition kind of thing.
At some point, I actually... This is something... I don't know who I was talking to. You know what? I had Jared Thatcher up here at my shop, and he was up for the day, and we were making bottle openers. And when we finished the bottle openers, I use gun blue on the bottle openers because it makes the steel very dark, and it's great. It's usually it's like a acid for oxidizing steel, and it turns it blue. It turns it blue and all the way and can turn it black. I've always been hesitant to use that on a chef's knife. Or any knife that, you know, is close to food. But a part of me is wondering, how much worse can that be than ferric chloride? Like, if you neutralize if you neutralize it, will there be, can't you neutralize it to a certain degree? So, because I would love to do a gun-blued knife, but I'm always just like, let's just try not to put so much chemicals on these goddamn things.
I've got a little tub of that perma-blue stuff, which is, you know, I think...
Yeah, it's probably the same stuff.
But yeah, it does say on the, you know, definitely don't use around food. But like you're right.
Yeah, but I mean,
if it's neutralized, it's, maybe.
If you wouldn't have a sip of ferric chloride, so it's like, what's the difference? All right, well, there you go. That's something to ask. I mean, we'll see. All of a sudden, everyone's going to have to gun blue chef knives. Maybe somebody already does it. Who knows?
Awesome.
All right, so the next question is from Black Star Custom Knives. How many times did you change your maker's mark before settling on the one you were really happy with? Or did you still use the original mark you first started out making knives with?
Good question. I've changed once. So the original mark that I had was in almost like a handwriting script kind of font. But there's a couple of things that I found with that. First of all, that the lines were very thin. So when it was being etched onto a blade, it was, you know, it was like pin thin, really thin. There are also a number of other makers who've got very similar names who have a very script kind of font. So, you know, this is the chance that people could have mistaken each other's. But the other one for me is, if you think about where that mark is going to be used, that mark is generally going to be your logo, which you're going to use on social media, which you're going to use on your website. It needs to work in a small space, so it needs to be quite bold. And you think of, you know, a little avatar that you'll use on, whether it's Instagram or wherever it may be. I think there's lots to consider really when choosing a mark. It's not just a case of, you know, sticking your name on something. You need to consider how it's going to look across, not just on knives, but across your packaging, on different, you know, different media, on in print or on, you know, online, that kind of thing. So yeah, I've changed mine once. I don't think I'll change again. I'm quite happy with what I've got, but it definitely needs a lot more thought than just copying a word and, you know, picking a font and writing your name.
Well, I totally have a different answer because mine was a totally by chance. So I might have told this before. I'll tell it quickly. I was at an old antique tool place, and I found a stamp that said the letters G, H, and F. And I thought, my wife's name is Hillary. It's Jeff Hillary Fader. Great. So I bought it for $1 or $2, and I was in the shop one day, and I thought, what the fuck? Why do I have to put my wife's name on it? She didn't care about. I was gonna do it for blacksmithing. I was like, what the hell? Why would I put her name on it? She's not here. She doesn't give a shit about the steel. She's had it with the steel. So I took the grinder and I ground. It's true. I ground out the H. So it was G and F with this giant space in between. And I was like, well, that looks terrible. Well, what can I do? So I started hitting it with a touch mark. I hit it with a center punch. And then I hit it with a chisel. And then I hit it with a second chisel. And I made a star that fit perfectly in between the G and the H. And I said, that looks good. But I need some kind of centering. So I did a touch. I did a center mark in the B front of the G and a center mark on the after the F. And I was like, that's nice. So then I was using that for a while. And I kept using it. And then I got a stamp made. I paid way too much for the stamp by a mile. I'm still using it, thank God, but Oy, I probably paid too much for that stamp. And then, pardon me, excuse me. And then when we started doing electro etching, I wanted it to look punched. So I got my stamp made into a stencil. And when I do the electro etching, I go up full blast to etch, and then it goes in deep, and it still looks like I punched it. But my logo for my hats and t-shirts and my website. My website's a little bit close, but my hats and t-shirts were made by this young friend of mine, Dean, who was an awesome little artist, and he made me the Fader Knives font, and that's where we're at. So I'm not planning on doing much changing.
Yeah.
There you are.
Okay, let's do one more, then we'll move on to some tips from our listeners. So somebody's asking, I think it's Joe Amack, I think the name is. Hey, Jeff, how do you make those protruding rounded lanyard tubes?
So on some of my outdoor knives, and I used to put them on my oyster knives, I would make a little loop, you know, a little hole in the back so you could put your string in it, or I don't know, you know, these hunters, when they're up to their elbows and guts, I guess the blood gets all slippery. So sometimes they need to tie their knife on so they don't drop their knife down in the cavity of the animal. So the problem was when I was drilling the holes out, I just, without anything in there, I thought it looked lousy. And then when I would glue in like a tube that was like 1/16 of an inch thick, it still didn't look great to me. I didn't like the way it looked, the way I was doing it. So I figured out there's an old blacksmithing trick where basically I get thin, very thin walled brass tube. And then I drive it in after the knife is finished. The knife is up. I hand sanded and finished. I clear the hole out, and then I drive in a bit of tube with like 1/8 of an inch on either side. And then I take an awl, like a very thin screwdriver, and I kind of wallow out that 1/8 of an inch on the outsides. So when you wallow it out, it also will make up the space. The other reason why I like to do those tubes is because if there's like a little bit of weird spacing, you can kind of like, with that thin brass, you can kind of like open it up and kind of fix it over. So when you wallow out, you wallow it out, and then I put a like a rounded center punch in a vise, and then with a ball peen hammer I start to fold everything over just a little bit on both sides. I put the knife with the wallowed out tube on top of the center punch, and then with a ball peen I'll just sort of break everything over, and then on both sides I'll just break everything over so they're starting to roll over, but I won't finish it with the ball peen hammer because the steel will make marks. So I switch over to a rubber mallet, and the rubber mallet gives the force but it doesn't give the dents, and it rolls everything over, and then it gives you like almost 1/16 of an inch all the way around protruding, and then it covers everything, and then it's a nice finish, and there you have it. It's a good finish. I like it. I'm not thrilled with lanyard holes at all in general. It is a nice little element when they're on right. They're great. I'm about to do 50 on all these El Banditos. I'm not looking forward to it, but that's how I do it. There you are.
Very good.
There you are. There you go.
I assume you bought those plugs and you just sort of, you know, the fasteners that you put in and then they were protruding. But yeah, that's really,
if I was smart, I would do that. But if I was smart, I would do that. I got to do everything by scratch like a mental patient. So stupid.
So Mareko's not here to tell you about our next sponsor, but it's Indasa USA. So you may think, who the hell are Indasa USA? They're the makers of the awesome Rhino Wet. So I use Rhino Wet, Jeff does, Mareko does. We use Rhino Wet for all our hand sanding because, firstly, it's cheap. Secondly, it lasts for ages. It's really strong and durable. It's the stuff. It's the stuff to use. It saves you time, saves you money. So Rhino Wet is the stuff to use for hand sanding. And if you want to get yourself some Rhino Wet, whether in the US or Canada, as we heard earlier, Texas Farrier Supply are the people to speak to, because they're going to give you 10% off any of your Rhino Wet, but also anything else that they have on their site at texasfarriersupply.com. It's not just farrier stuff. They've got a whole knife making sort of part of the website. You can get 10% off anything if you use the promo code KnifeTalk10. And as we found out earlier, they're delivering to Canada as well as the US. Go take a look. They've got some stuff which is you wouldn't find anywhere else as well. So it's always worth taking a look. TexasFarrierSupply.com, and they're supplying Rhino Wet as well as everything else that you'd need.
I tell you what I did get from them the last time I ordered. I got a couple of forging punches. They have punches for farriers. They're called punch bobs or plum bobs or some kind of bob, and then they're for punching holes for bottle openers. They're perfect. They're perfect. So yeah, they have a lot of great little things, and they're good dudes.
Okay. Let's have some tips that we can rip into.
Hey, you know what you should do?
I like that pregnant pause. Hey, I don't know if it's maybe it's me, but he said, hey, you know what you should do?
Hey, you. Yeah. You know what you should do?
Yeah, that's it. So this is the time where we allow. We're so far. We're asking you to give us your tips. But recently, what's been happening is when we've been hearing a tip where that's a little dodgy, like some food recipe that we don't think so great, we'll give it to you. So this has become Craig's favorite part of the show, where we judge your tips.
Let's take one from Smash It Knives and Forge. He says he's been storing all his sandpaper in an accordion file. It's been a great little shop hack. It's reduced loss of clutter, and he can put the small unused strips in there to save material. And he can carry it wherever he needs it. Yeah. So maybe a new segment can be shop hacks to help productivity.
I love this tip. I'm with it 100%. And Smash It Knives and Forge is also serving his country proudly. We salute you. He was listening in the field somewhere. So I'm with you.
Nice.
All right. So here's a tip from Albadi Alsied.
I've got to say, before you move on, this guy sent me a hand sanding sort of this little aluminium block with like a little jig for hand sanding. That was about 4 or 5 months ago, and it took a while to get to me. By the time it got to me, I didn't know who'd sent it. I'd forgotten, so I was going through all my DMs, and I had so many that I couldn't remember who it was. And now I've seen the name, I remember. So thank you very much, Albody. I wanted to say thank you before, but I just couldn't remember who it was, sorry. It was sort of buried down this big list. But thank you so much. Thank you.
Well, as thanks, we will be only happy and supportive of this tip, right?
Go.
No matter how bad it is, right? all right. This comes from Albadi Alsied, our friend and supporter. Hey, I got some tips for you guys. For those of you who want to learn about the business side of blacksmithing or any small business, go listen to the early episodes of Blacksmither Radio. And especially the interviews with Valerie Osternak and Karina Sephora Menzoff. Thanks for the great podcast, cuties. Yeah, the Blacksmither Radio is on the, I believe it's on, it's Blacksmither is also the Burn Network, and that's who hosts Blacksmith's Pub too. So,
right.
Yes, that is a very good thing to do.
So he's written Blacksmither with a capital H, as in her. So is it hosted and run by females?
Yeah, Victoria Patty. Victoria Patty is the host of Blacksmither Radio.
Which brings us to another question that we had, actually. Let me just play this one.
Hello?
Hey, you guys. This is Ashley Childs calling. I've been talking to my buddy, coworker Jonathan Wetzel a lot about your podcast. He listens to basically every single one. He is curious how often you guys have women call in or have on the show, because there's so many talented lady metalsmiths out there, including myself. I just wanted to see, you know, how's that work, and how you guys could get some more women on your show. Anyway, this is really like a tool question. But my phone number is 213.
All right, don't give her your phone number. Ashley, don't give out your phone number.
No
Jesus,
phone numbers,
Ashley.
Jeez.
Don't give out the phone number, God's sakes. Ashley, this is the reason why we don't have you on the podcast. You're giving your numbers out on the podcast.
But that's a very good question, actually, because we know there's plenty of females out there that do an awesome work. And we don't generally have people on the show now. It's only when one of us can't make the show. But the previous iteration of the show used to be myself interviewing people. So I think there's probably about 40 interviews. And I think four, possibly five of them with females. And I tried very hard to get more females on. But I will be honest, I did approach some and they didn't want to do it. And the reason they gave me is because of the amount of shit that they get from people, which I think is disgusting. People should be ashamed of themselves if they're giving anybody shit, female, male, whatever. But yeah, I could completely understand their point of view that, you know, they're putting stuff out and they're just getting a bunch of dudes in their comments just trying to, you know, smack down what they're doing, and it's terrible. So I could see why they wouldn't want to be on the show. But yeah, I mean, I know, I think Jeff feels the same, actually. We're more than happy to, you know, to we do our community showcase, and we try to put more women on the community showcase and that kind of thing.
I think we should have AC on. I think we should have Ashley on at some point. Here's the people send me messages. You know, you should have on. You should have this guy on. How come you don't have this guy on?
Yeah.
There's a lot of moving parts to this podcast. We usually record on Saturdays or Sundays. This is a Friday afternoon, which is totally different because of our schedules. The other thing is a lot of you people seem to think that this is like a real radio show where you can call in. It doesn't work like that. We want the audio to be good, and we have problems sometimes. And a lot of times people don't have the information. You have the a computer, we want a good mic, we have the thing. And then the fact that remains is we're all on three different parts of the planet. And it just becomes more of a frustration, and we're trying to make it easier. Now, in regards to Ashley Childs, I'm a fan. I'd like to have Ashley Childs on the podcast sooner rather than later. Yeah, that's just don't give your phone number on the podcast, and we'll figure this out. But AC, I'm with you 100%.
I think Mareko introduced me to Ashley's work in our showcase probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
That was me.
It was you. Right, yeah. Okay. And, you know, we do try to do that. So if anybody knows of any other, you know, females out there doing good work, let us know. We're more than happy to shout out.
Fine. Yeah, 100%. We're with you. AC, we're with you 100%.
There we go.
There you are.
We don't.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I was like, oh, she's going to say a number. Hilarious. Beep it out.
I thought... Jeez.
Now, we talked about community showcase. Now, unfortunately, I don't have one this week. Do you have one, Jeff?
I do have one, and it fits in perfectly. I actually, before I knew that we were going to get a call in from NW Networks, I thought I'd just read. This is where from Ashley Childs. Works at NW Knifeworks.
Wait there,
basically,
Jeff.
They're looking right now.
Whoa. You know the rules by now. There's got to be a jingle first.
Community Showcase.
As you were.
Listen, I'm not the one pushing the buttons. I'm with you 100%. I love that dude. All right, so this goes out to NW Knifeworks. That's the guys who called in saying there's a job. They are actually looking for... They have a location in Victor, Idaho, and they're looking for a couple knife makers, and they're saying they're paying well. I don't know what they're paying. Don't ask me what they're paying. Don't start DMing. What are they charging? Go get your resume and go get a put on a bow tie and go comb your fucking hair and go send them your resume and go out to Idaho and kick some ass, because all of a sudden everybody wants to know how you become a knife maker. When people like this, NW Knifeworks, are saying we're hiring, go take your pull your pants up, straighten yourself out, go in there and say, I'm here for you. And then learn how to make some knives. So NW Knifeworks, they're looking for some new knife works. As they say, it pays pretty dang well. I didn't say that, they said that. It pays pretty dang well, and you can make your own schedule. And they've been listening to the podcast. We're with you, NW Knifeworks. They're doing a nice job, American-made knives. What do you have to lose?
Exactly.
Go send them a resume. NW Knifeworks.
Any Europeans out there looking for a job in knife making too, contact Toma at Florentine Knives.
Is he still looking?
I'd imagine he probably got a ton of applications, but I'm not sure if he's taken anyone on yet. But just in case,
he didn't say anything.
Send it to Toma.
There's a guy who is would probably be, if you're hearing this every so often, it can't hurt to send a resume in. And I'll be honest with you. Usually, a lot of times, you get the best employees by random chance. So if there's someone who you why not? It can't hurt to send a resume to somebody who is looking for work. All they have to do is say no. So it's not the, I mean, I know the guys who are looking for help, they're looking for help. But if you're the kind of person who wants to be help, send a resume out. What's the big deal? What are they going to do? You know, they're not going to hunt you down. You say, they'll say no, we're not hiring. Can't hurt.
Anybody else looking for work, send us a note and we'll put it out on the show.
We've got beef.
Yeah, and we... and we only take a 10% commission.
if only.
There you are.
Beefs. We've got beefs. I'm going to kick things off here because I've had a bit of a day of it. So my beef is fucking Tim. And you may
who's
ask,
Tim?
You may ask who Tim is. So there's very fucking little that Tim. I outsource here. But one thing is I get logos laser etched onto a blade. Right. I'd love to have a laser myself. I like the finish of it. It's, you know, it's pinpoint accuracy and it's, you know, it's a deep etch. It'll stay forever. I love it. But, you know, they cost a lot of money. So I outsource it, and I'm thankful that I live close to Thiers, which is like the knife making sort of capital of France. And there's a big factory here that'll do it. And there's this guy, fucking Tim, right?
is this a real person?
This is a real person. So fucking Tim, every time I ring him, he doesn't answer. I'll email and he just won't reply back for days and days, and this goes on and on. And it's just a nightmare. It's just the very last part of a job, quite often before I need to send out to the customer. So anyway, just yesterday, he finally got back to me and said, Craig, if you want to come down tomorrow, I'll get them done while you wait. I'm like, great, okay. So, I mean, this is still a three-hour drive for me. 3 hour there, 3 hour back.
Ugh.
So I'm like, oh, geez. Okay, so I got 100 knives that need to be done. So I was like, right, okay, stick them in the car. And I thought, well, it's a nice day. My wife came and we took the kids. We thought we'd go out for lunch and we'd make a day of it. Because Thiers, it's a beautiful place as well. So we head off. Right. We have a little bit of lunch. And we head on down to Tim's factory. And it's a huge factory. This whole estate is full of knife makers. It's crazy there. So we pull up and there's no cars in the whole of the car park. And I'm like, oh, geez.
Get out of here.
Oh, geez. So I come out and I ring this buzzer to the door. No response. I phone his phone number. No response. Fucking Tim decided to have the day off and not tell me after only yesterday. He said, come and bring the knives. I'll get them etched for you.
Tim, you fucking asshole.
Wasted a whole day where I could have been in the shop doing stuff. You know, it's, you know, this all the tolls and stuff to get there. It's probably cost me about £200 today, and I've come back with nothing, as well as a wasted day in the shop.
Did you get a hold of him?
Fucking Tim. No, I didn't. I didn't.
Are you going to give Tim an earful?
I am, but also what I did do is because where his factory is, it's in like this big retail park full of other factories making knives. So while I'm here, I'm just gonna knock on a few doors. And I found somebody else to do it for me. So fucking Tim, you're having no more of my business.
Oh, you fucking idiot, Tim.
And there's only one other person listening to this who knows who fucking Tim is. And I'm pretty sure he is just as fuming with Tim as I am.
Tim, you stupid guy.
Fucking Tim.
Why? What is the matter with people? Seriously.
He's
French.
Is, 3 hours there, 3 hours back. You
you're
know,
crazy.
And it's like, ugh. Man,
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah,
Tim, you had your chance and you blew it. You blew it, Tim.
More than what is this has happened on numerous occasions. I've been let down by various things. So yeah, fuck you, Tim.
Tim, god damn it, Tim. I would go to the local welder and weld his fucking door shut. That's what I would do. I would do that. I'll tell you a funny story. Back in the day, I used to work in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and I worked for this guy who was a tough dude. And we were in a space with a lot of different artists. And this one artist, I guess he was taking his trash or something, and he decided to take his trash bag and just threw it down the hallway. And the guy I was working for kind of got into it with him, and they just started, what are you doing? Throw the garbage, throw the garbage. And the guy said something to my guy, and my guy puts his finger in his chest and he goes, you better keep your fucking mouth shut or I'm going to weld you in your fucking shop. No one will ever find you.
Jesus.
Unbelievable, yeah. Yeah. So Tim, you got lucky. Tim, yeah. You could have gotten the old Welderoo.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Tim. That is infuriating, Tim.
It is absolutely infuriating. And I've literally got back like 10 minutes before this podcast. So I'm hungry. I'm tired. Fuck you, Tim.
Tim. Well, yours is way worse than mine. Mine is goddamn printers. My beef is I have this printer that so I put the paper in and I put the thing in. I cover it in plastic. And it's important. People wonder, well, I still have printers. Because when my partner Tony gets our orders, he can – it's got a Wi-Fi. It's on Wi-Fi. It's got an email address. So he can send the tickets directly to the printer.
Hmm.
So I don't have to download it. I don't have to do anything. They just show up. It's like a restaurant order. You know, it comes right up on the printer. So the printer goes, doo-doo. Something's wrong with the paper. All right, so I open it up, and I put the paper in. I press the OK button. It goes, doo-doo. Your paper's still fucked up. So I open it up again, and I change the paper, and I check, make sure that everything's good. And I close the door, and I go, doo-doo. Your printer's still fucked up. On and on, I'm slamming it. I'm pushing it. Doo doo. It still didn't fix it, asshole. Push it in. Take it out. Doo doo. It's like goddamn infuriating. I'm pilling it out. I'm pushing it out. I'm calling Tony. I'm like, I'm gonna throw this goddamn printer out of the fucking out the window. And they press the button. Doo doo. Still not working. So this goddamn thing got me so. I mean, it gets me crazy. And then I posted a little story, and people were saying that actually Andreas Kalani, one of the highest level dudes around, said that he thinks that there's dust on my sensors. So I'm supposed to blow the goddamn thing out with but it was like, and not to mention my buddy Keith Decent said, get ready for all your Office Space memes. And yeah, everyone's sending me the lines from the movie Office Space. But for like 25 minutes, I was going, because I packed up this set of knives, and then the people wanted me to print up all the emails I sent just so that their guests could, you know, the recipient could see it. So I'm trying to print up these papers. Doo-doo! Something's wrong. Doo-doo! We hate you, Jeff. Doo-doo! They're giving me the finger. This goddamn computer is giving me the finger. And basically, the way I would fix it is I'm going to give a good quote to finish things off with. Jim Palmas is an awesome blacksmith in New York. He used to actually be the blacksmith for Central Park. The New York City has a few blacksmith positions. They're really a lot of just, they're called blacksmith, but they do a lot of maintenance and stuff like that. And Jim was on there, and his quote is, if you can't fix it with a hammer, it's an electrical problem. So I was gonna fucking jack this goddamn printer with a hammer, but I didn't. So doo doo, fuck you, printer. Doo doo, still didn't get it. Doo doo, there we are. So you know, fuck you, printers. I hate you.
We can send people to the moon. We've got cars that drive themselves. I've never had a printer that just works. Never ever.
But so you know this problem.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. There's not a single printer out there that works as it should. It's yeah. I blame fucking Tim.
Yeah, it's your problem, Tim. You fucked up. Blaming you. Fuck you, Tim.
Yep.
An asshole. Is there some? Was it just him? Is it just him in that shop?
No, it's a whole business. But the whole business was shut for the day.
So he closed the whole place down.
He must have known that.
Wait a second. Wait a second. Let's hold this phone for a second. What if something bad happened to Tim, and we're bashing? Oh. What if Tim had a problem, real problem? Aren't we going to feel bad about this whole thing? You're going to have to scrub this whole thing.
Fuck him. I hope he does have a problem.
There you go, baby. Fuck you, Tim.
There's a show.
I hope something bad happened to Tim.